Mr. King, Reel 13. Before we finally leave Tunisia, after Sedjenine and going into the woods, have you any other memories of the time that you were there?
I can remember Major Waller and having some activities with him. I think it was somewhere near Jebel Abiad, where I can't remember really. I think there was something about a mine in Jebel Abiad, but I can't really remember what it was about. But I remember Major Waller coming and being involved in some activities with him. That's about as much as I remember.
Do you remember much about him? What was he like?
Maybe, he was very tall, very active man, sort of gave me the impression that he was going to be a new Rome so he can play. He seemed very, very active, very knowledgeable fella. Seemed to know what he was doing anyway, you know, because, as I say, I can't remember a great deal of what we were doing.
Well, after your time, he came to lead the battalion, ultimately. Yeah. After your time.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have no more memories of Tunisia, we'll go back to arriving in England. What happened to you then?
I came on leave. And I was told to report back then to Bransworth initially. I reported back to Bransworth, and I wasn't there very long, maybe about a week, maybe less than that, a couple of days, in fact. And then I was told to report to Bury, to the 2nd Battalion Royal Warwickshire Regiment, as a battle instructor. Now I was always told, I was told I wasn't going to be transferred, I was just going to be sent as a battle instructor because instead of the battalion training to go to Sicily, the Canadians were going to go, and I was always told that if and when the battalion went to Sicily, I would rejoin the battalion, the Durhams I'm talking about. So it never entered my head that I was going to go to be transferred to another battalion, that I was always going to be a Durham Light Infantryman. And it was as a Durham Light Infantryman that I went up to Berwick. And I was accepted on secondment, when I met the CO, first day I had to go and see the CO, and he said that I was just on secondment as far as he was concerned, because I'd had sort of battle experience, as he said, and that as they were training for the Second Front, then I would be invaluable in giving sort of battle experience to these blokes that were training.
Which battalion of the Warwicks were they?
The 2nd Battalion. It was a regular battalion of the Warwicks who would spend, I don't know, they hadn't come back from India sort of all that recently, but they spent a hell of a long time in India, because I remember we got bloody curried eggs and curried bacon and curried, we had it. I think everything was curried except the tea. I think the only thing they didn't curry was the tea. As I said, they were a regular battalion. And all I did for the first month or so, I was sergeant then. As I said, I'd reverted back because I'd acted as temporary sergeant major in Tunisia when Sergeant Major Broadhead got killed, and I was the senior sergeant. But that was just like on a temporary basis. I guess it was maybe just on a temporary basis anyway. But anyway, when I came back to England, I came back as a sergeant. I was war substantive sergeant. And all I did, in fact, well, in fact, I had an unfortunate beginning because I fell out with the RSM. In fact, they were in this school in Berwick, just outside Berwick, actually. And I was downstairs, like, looking. I'd done my kid bag, and I was looking for the early room. And this bloke popped his head over the banister, quite nasty, really. Shouted, "What you doing there?" Something like that, you know. And I said, "What the hell has he got to do with you? Who you suppose you was talking to?" You know, because I was a sergeant, actually, you know. He says, "Nobody comes in here, you know, without me knowing about it," something like that. I said, "Who the hell are you, like?" You know, because the RSM of all trades. Well, anyway, I remember they called him Bricky Wall, this fella, this RSM. Anyway, it all sort of boiled, you know. It was an unfortunate beginning, like, but well, it didn't last long, like, you know. At least there was no enmity, I mean, you know, it just sort of laughed off later on, like, I think. And all I did was to, as they were training, similarly to what I was doing on the Carter in Brasfort, really, I was just going round, and it was mostly on firing positions and failed training and that sort of thing, you know, rather than weapon training. It was more when we were doing schemes and you know, telling them where to take cover and how to take cover. You know, who the hell was I to give that sort of information when we were stuck up in the bodies in Tunisia, never mind. And then, right out of the blue, I remember one Saturday morning, I was on a cross-country run. When I came back off this cross-country run, the message was I had to go and say the CO, best battle dress, and say the CO straight away. So anyway, I went marching to say the CO, and again I had an unfortunate experience there. As he said, "We've been watching you, you know, while you've been here." He says, "We've got a company that really needs some discipline." And he says, "I want you to take the company over as Sergeant Major." Well, that sort of shook me a bit rigid, really, like, you know. But yeah, I said, "Wait, how about this, the quarter bloke, like, you know, the quartermaster sergeant?" And oh, the CEO got really uppity, like, naturally. Who the hell was I to question him, that? He says, "I'll make the decisions, who the hell, you know, who are from what, that sort of thing. Nothing to do with you. What the hell happens to the quartermaster?" Because they were regular soldiers, you say. I mean, they were all regulars. And I was a jury, of course, among all these broomies, you know. I think I was the only, there was only another lad from Spennymoor, actually. I found out later on, was a jury. We must have been the only two juries in the battalion. Anyway, it was funny. He said, "I want you to go down to Berwick." He says, I've made notifications to the early room. He says, "We're going to promote you straight away. It'll be on orders tomorrow, sort of stuff. But we want you to take over straight away." So he says, "Get yourself a pair of crowns and a set of crowns," he says, "and take." Well, that was it. So it was. Anyway, I went down to Berwick. Went into this shop in Berwick, and sure enough, oddly enough, how the hell I got out of it anyway, I got this set of crowns in Berwick. And stuck them on, you know, well, you know, they were metal crowns, of course, you slot a throw, you know. And went into the sergeant's vest. Really. Everybody was saying that it was dead quiet, dead silence, you know, when I walked in. And this quarter bloke got up They went to the RSM straight away, man, as soon as I went there. Plain hell about me being promoted, of course, above him. And he came across to me this time. He says, you know, what the hell are you? You know, you've just come to battalion, this sort of thing. I said, look, lad, nothing to do with me. Go and see the British CEO, you know, if you want to sort it out. Don't play with me, lad. So there was this animosity at the beginning. And, anyway, I took this company over.
Before we go further, how had these quite experienced in India professional soldiers took to a conscripted Burmite infantryman?
Badly.
You'd had this all the way through from the beginning.
Yeah, I remember in fact, oddly enough, there's another story about that. The Sergeant Major in B Company was called Buck Jones, and his mate had been transferred to make way for me. But what had happened, you say, I didn't know this, of course, until later on. Everybody over a certain age, whether it be a sergeant, male, whatever he was, they were transferring them out to make way for the second front, you know, the assault on the second front. And they were transferring all these older people out, and the sergeant major that I took over from was one of the older people. So there was no sort of nothing in it in that sense. But anyway, as I say, I took this company over. And oddly enough, the senior sergeant that had this company, he was called Jammy Wright. Well, the very name, you know, shows what the blokes thought of, like Jammy. He was Jammy, old Jammy, you know. He was a hunk of a man. He was a massive fella. You know, he had hands like shovels, one of these big fellas, you know. He had literally hands like British shovels. he was dead cushy, so, you know. And as I say, the CEO said to me, man, I want you to have some effect on this company, because they've got really slap at you, you know. So the first morning, I said to the orderly sergeant, I said, man, I want you to go around as a corporal called Slaith. I said, I want you to go around, man, at Rivali. I said, I want you to make sure that you're waking everybody up. Man, you must wake everybody. NCOs in charge of the rooms and everybody, and I'll follow you around. So I nabbed another corporal. Said, look, I want you to come with me. And I said, we'd follow the orderly sergeant now. After about 10 minutes, you know, heard him going now, wakey-wakey and all this. And I followed him around. Took 32 names. Bloke still in bed, and you know. So this was the first morning I'd taken over. I thought, well, there's only one way to do it, lad, if I've got to make some discipline, I'd see it like it. So I don't think the company commander knew that I'd taken over, actually. You know, it was one of them things that, like, happened on the weekend, and I don't think he knew that. Anyway, this company commander come over, called him Banjo Barrett, and he was big, big fat chap he was, and swinging his stick, you know. I said, good morning, sir, salute. Good morning, sir. I said, I'm your new sergeant major. Oh, he says, what's the parade, sergeant? I said, company orders, sir. He would die, I think. This company orders, 32. I said, how many is there? 30. I said, 32 men, sir. He said, what's the charge? I said, sleeping in bed after revalidation. This is what am I going to do with all these? Like, you know. I said, look, all I want you to do is to give them a good bulletin. That's it. Just tell them that as from now, they're going to have to soldier. That's it. Oh, yes, right. And he did. Mike, give me his job. He did. And from then, oddly enough, we built a pretty good company. We had a really good company, because, as I said, I always had a rule that I would warn a bloke once. I always warned a bloke once. If I saw him with a hat off or whatever, I said, "Look, lad, next time I say yeah, that's it. I'll warn you now, don't do it again." And it worked. You, by and large, anyway, by and large, it worked.
Had you met them at the very beginning, as when you first went in, and kind of told them what you expected, what you wanted from them?
Well, I just taken off on the Saturday, you know, after the cross-country parade. So that Sunday was just sort of, I didn't even take over on the Sunday. I think I took over on the Monday morning. It might have been the Sunday, I couldn't say. You know, anyway, that's when I took over. Could have been the Sunday morning.
Well, they a stack company, obviously, because of poor leadership, really. Did that include the way that the standard of their dress and behaviour things?
No. Funnily enough, no. I think they just, they'd had the sergeant major that they had was a fairly oldish fellow, I think. And the sergeants were Jamie Wright, of course, was really notoriously cushy. You know, of course, we had to bump them up, and naturally, of course, we had to give them a hell of a pep talk. I remember another bloke called, what did they call him? His nickname was Blackie. Sergeant. Blackie. He was like a dark visage fella, like. All from Birmingham, all Birmingham blokes. But now what the general atmosphere, I think they were just doing what normally soldiers do if they let off the hook, I think. They just, Blackie, this fellow I was thinking about, Blackie Nevin, they called him, Sergeant Nevin. And there was Jamie Wright. Who did they call the other one? The three sergeants in the company, of course. Platoon sergeants. And you see, what must have alarmed them? I looked so young. You know, I was just pretty worse. 23 or something like that myself. You know, I was just a bit wet behind the ears. I was before there, must have thought. So who the hell's this pretty jolly coming, you know, telling us what to do, sort of. So there was a lot of that in it, like, after war.
And
but I got hard, I used to see at the hair, like, that's, you know, that's it, like, I'm here to do a job and I'm going to do it. And so that didn't affect me, to be honest, you know. And I overcame that. To be honest, that was overcome by, by the fact that I think they knew how they were on, and that was it.
You mentioned that they were a regular unit from India.
Yeah.
Had any of these men seen any action in India itself between the wars?
No, I don't think so.
So they were regular soldiers, they weren't. Battle? No. Were they asking you what battle was like, because you had been seen?
Well, like you say, what I was doing was just going round. At least before I was promoted, because then I was promoted, and I was told then, because I said to the CO, I was always given the understanding that I'll be returning back to the. Oh no, he said, we've asked for you, but you know, we've made an application that you be transferred. And it was then, I was just sort of officially transferred then, when I was promoted, you know.
Did that disappoint you, knowing that you weren't going to go back to Durham?
Well, it did, yes, because you say it was such a change in the fact that, they were all Brummies anyway, and I was sort of a stranger amongst them. And it was like I'd been used to light infantry, of course, and all the light infantry commands and all that sort of thing. But, you know, this is where that, the course I did down at the Guards Depot came in useful, of course, as it happens later on. Because I could easily adapt to the heavy infantry commands, which are quite different, of course, as far as. You know, you bring the people attention, and that all by different commands as opposed to the light infantry command. So that was a change, yeah. But the training was totally different, of course. It was mostly field training that we were doing then. We did a commando course, I remember. Went up and did a commando course up at, where the hell's that place where the big memorial is?
It's up near Fort William, isn't it?
Spain Bridge is somewhere around there. We did a commando course.
What did that entail?
Well, climbing across ravines on ropes and, sliding across on the ropes and basically getting wet through and uncomfortably wet through. And I remember doing a lot of it pre-invasion training.
Did this include...
So we did a lot... This pre-invasion training was... we used to go out onto the... I'll tell you where we went to. Two islands called Roman Egg, and they used to do drop the doors on the sandbars. They used to know where the sandbars were, and you would drop the doors over these invasion craft, and have people dashed out and maybe into about up to your ankles, and by the time you got about another 10 yards, you were up there, up to your neck. Because they deliberately dropped you onto the sandbars. And another exercise we used to do was to march them down to the jetty when we were up near Nairn and areas like that, and round Rumadeg. We used to march the lads down to the jetty, and they had to jump in and swim round the edge of the jetty back to the shore, because we lost one or two, actually.
Was this in uniform? Was this in uniform and they jumped in?
Yeah. They had these like Mae West. They used to give them one of these sort of Mae West things, but they weren't very good.
I was going to ask, what did the non-swimmer do?
Yeah, you used to use these sort of just like a very thin life belt it was, And anyway, that's what we used to do, and.
How many would one of these infantry craft hold?
Oh, the small about a platoon.
Just a small boat.
Yeah, it was a small one. Yeah, the LSA. What was it? Landing craft. SAI, landing craft infantry, if you used to call it. Then there was the small landing craft. I don't know what the exact type was of that. Anyway, they're just were very small.
Did you do it?
Like a canopy over the top, oddly enough. It was just like a little box with the middle sort of taken out, and there was sort of one set of seats, and they were sort of half covered with a canopy, but the middle was completely over. But the lads on each side used to have a bit of shelter from the spray and that under the canopy. They used to get on those. And that was the sort of training that we were doing. Then it was sort of fairly active field training nearly all the time,
What was field training based on?
Well, we used to do schemes, of course,
Was it movement and fire?
All fire and movement. I remember that... We used to do these schemes where they used to have to crawl through up streams and, up through pipes and all just to make them realise, it was fairly heavy training actually. But then, and people were getting very fit and, no doubt about it, but they were building up to a good battalion, as far as knowledge is concerned actually. I think they were much more knowledgeable of the war then than what the Durhams were when they first joined. You know what I mean? Well, of course, a couple of years difference, wasn't there?
Were you getting talks on the Germans and weapons and so forth?
A lot of aircraft training and aircraft drill, and a hell of a yes, it was. There was a lot of used to get more information on the Slicers and the. The makeup of the the weapons that the Germans were using as well, of course. Because there was more information coming through, I suppose, you know.
Different types of German units were you
well, we
being
were,
told
we,
about
yeah,
those?
Yeah, used to talk about the Hitler Youth and the Jäger regiments and that sort of thing. But not a great deal about the different, you know. So I was told about the Panzer units, of course, because, you know, well, you used to say, on the, well, not so much on the news rails, but I think that was the overriding fact that they thought that there was, we were going to be more tank warfare than what there was going to be sort of infantry warfare, you know.
What weapons were you using at this stage of the war within an infantry battalion?
Sten guns were coming in then, of course. The Sten gun was really popular. At least it wasn't popular with the blokes, because it used to go off unexpectedly. You know, and I can remember having one or two blokes shot with Stens going off when blokes used to jump down if they hadn't a safety catch on. You know, the jar used to set them off, you know. And if people were a bit slack on not making sure the weapons were safe, you know, that one or two got shot that way, you know. They sort of had one or two casualties in that sense.
Had anti-tank weapons, infantry anti-tank weapons, had they been updated, improved on?
Oh, yeah. Well, we used to... Not a great deal, as far as I recall. We just had the, you know, there was the Piat. But I can't recall much anti-tank stuff that we had.
You said that you were, the soldiers finding out far more about the enemy and his weapons and so forth than there had been in the past. How about personal initiative? Was that being inculcated into the man?
I think everybody had more idea of looking after themselves rather than being looked after. You know, I think the general idea was that you had to be self-sustainable, you know.
That if they lost officers and NCOs, they could.
That's right. I found that once I'd been accepted, and I was, of course, accepted, you know, well, at least I think I was, that it became a very good unit, actually, as far as comradeship was concerned as well, you know. I mean, as I say, I was almost an old man out, but I got on very well with the majority of people, you know.
Can we look at the structure of this particular infantry battalion that you were in prior to D-Day? How was it made up, the battalion?
Well, mostly, four companies, of course, the rifle companies. Then there was a support company.
What was in the support company?
The support company was mostly anti-tank stuff, heavy mortars. The mortars were 4.2s rather than the original 2-inch mortars.
Was there an improvement on the?
Oh yeah, they're much bigger, of course, much bigger mortar altogether. Very heavy, of course. You nearly needed a fairly big team to maybe about four or five blokes, maybe six blokes in the team, as far as the 4.2 mortars. Because you were on sort of heavy tripods, you know, pretty heavy tripods and the barrels.
The anti-tank platoon would have the latest anti-tank guns, have they? Infantry ones? The 2-pounder presumably was disappearing by then.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember, to be honest, much about the anti-tank platoon. What they had.
But they were there was a
oh,
second.
Oh, yeah,